This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lin, Dan Friedel, and Susan Shand. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, the government of Taiwan reports that 28 Chinese military aircraft entered the island's Air Defense Identification Zone on Tuesday. That is the largest number of Chinese aircraft reported to enter Taiwan's airspace. The news comes after leaders from the Group of Seven nations issued a joint statement Sunday criticizing China on several points. The leaders of the world's seven richest democracies also declared the importance of peace across the Taiwan Strait. China condemned the comments as slander. Taiwan says China's Air Force has repeatedly entered its airspace over recent months. Most of the activity has happened in the southwestern part of its air defense area near the Pratas Islands, which Taiwan controls. The latest Chinese operation involved 14 J-16 and 6 J-11 jet fighters and 4 H-6 bombers. These aircraft can carry nuclear weapons as well as anti-submarine and electronic warfare devices, Taiwan's defense ministry said. Early warning and control radar aircraft also were reported. It was the largest daily activity since the ministry began regularly reporting Chinese Air Force activities in Taiwan's air defense area last year. An earlier record of 25 aircraft was reported on April 12th. The ministry added that Taiwan launched military aircraft to intercept and warn away the Chinese aircraft. Missile systems were also deployed. A map provided by the ministry showed Chinese bombers and some of the fighter aircraft also flew around the southern part of Taiwan. China's defense ministry did not answer a Reuters request for comment. In the past, Chinese officials described such activities as necessary to protect the country's sovereignty and deal with what they called collusion between Taiwan and the U.S. The United States has no official diplomatic ties with Taiwan. But the U.S. has watched with concern Taiwan's increasing tensions with mainland China. Taiwan has been a self-ruling area since the end of China's Civil War in 1949. The Chinese government describes Taiwan as its most sensitive territorial issue. It has warned the U.S. against interference. And China has never denied the possible use of force to end Taiwan's self-rule.
The inventor of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, is selling the first lines of computer code that he used to create it. The code will be part of an NFT sold later this month in an auction by international seller Sotheby's. The digital NFT, or non-fungible token, includes 9,555 lines of code Berners-Lee used to begin the World Wide Web. The British-born computer scientist created the code between October 1990 and August 1991, Sotheby's says in a description on its website. In addition, the NFT will include an animation of the code being written. It will also contain a letter written by Berners-Lee in which he gives his thoughts on the code and his process for creating it. The buyer will also receive a digital poster of the full code that includes a representation of Berners-Lee's signature. Berners-Lee is credited with inventing in 1989, what would become the World Wide Web. The idea came while he was working at CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research in Switzerland. He proposed a way to link the computers of scientists from all over the world to CERN's computers so they could more easily share information. The World Wide Web officially launched in August 1991. Berners-Lee spoke about the upcoming sale in a statement. Why an NFT? Well, it's a natural thing to do when you're a computer scientist and when you write code and have been for many years, he said. It feels right to digitally sign my autograph on a completely digital artifact. The popularity of NFTs has risen this year. In March, a digital piece of artwork by American artist Mike Winkelmann, also known as Beeple, sold for nearly $70 million. The Sotheby's auction, called This Changed Everything, will run from June 23rd to 30th. The price of the NFT will start at $1,000. Cassandra Hatton, head of science and popular culture at Sotheby's, said the NFT represents the internet creator's historic influence on the world. Tim's invention created a new world, democratizing the sharing of information, creating new ways of thinking and interacting, and staying connected to one another, she said. I'm Brian Lynn.
The United States and the European Union have agreed to end their nearly 17-year trade dispute over government aid to Boeing and Airbus. The deal permits the two sides to center on a common economic threat, China. Since 2004, the U.S. and the EU have argued that government aid to the plane makers brought unfair competition. The dispute became more heated under former U.S. President Donald Trump. It led to more taxes on imports, or tariffs, from American and European products, including French wine, German cookies, and American alcohol products. In March, weeks after President Joe Biden took office, the two sides agreed to suspend tariffs on over $11 billion of goods for 4 months. On Tuesday, they agreed to suspend the tariffs for 5 years while still working on an overall agreement. Ursula von der Leyen is the president of the European Commission. She said the deal moved the parties from litigation to cooperation on aircraft after 17 years of dispute. And Biden said that it is in the interest of the USA to have a great relationship with NATO and the EU. U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai added, "Instead of fighting with one of our closest allies, we are finally coming together against a common threat." Tai, however, warned that the tariffs could start up again if American companies cannot compete fairly with those in Europe. As part of the agreement, the U.S. and the EU will set up a working group to discuss issues, including financing and research support for plane makers. They want to avoid support that would harm the other side, and they will fight non-market practices from China to help its aircraft industry. Both sides said they were confident the Airbus-Boeing dispute would end within 5 years, and plane makers Airbus and Boeing cheered the agreement. The agreement removes one of two major trade conflicts left over from the Trump administration. The other involves tariffs on EU steel and aluminum imports. That move angered EU leaders because Trump claimed the tariffs were for national security reasons. The conflict hurts European producers and raises the cost of steel for American companies. And the EU retaliated by raising tariffs on products like U.S.-made Harley-Davidson motorcycles and Levi's blue jeans. Tuesday's agreement is welcome news for an airline industry that has been hurt by coronavirus travel restrictions. It also brings international goodwill for Biden as he prepares to meet on Wednesday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. I'm Dan Friedel.
After her three children were vaccinated, Aja Purnell Mitchell asked them what they wanted to do for the summer. All three agreed. Summer school. At school itself. The family lives in Durham County, North Carolina, where school buildings shut in March 2020, the start of the COVID-19 crisis. Students have been in distance learning since then. Purnell Mitchell hopes in-person summer school will help life return to normal. Getting them back into it, helping them socialize back with their friends, maybe meet some new people, and, of course, pick up the things that they lacked on Zoom, she said. Zoom is an online video system. Many teachers in the United States used it and similar sites to teach their students at home. Communities across the U.S. are preparing for increased interest in summer education programs. They have expanded offerings and are paying teachers more than usual to work over the break. The most recent federal COVID-19 bill provides billions of dollars in aid to states, The Biden administration is requiring them to use some of it for widening their summer programs. The U.S. Department of Education said it is too early to know how many students will go to classes this summer. The number, however, is sure to be higher than the estimated 3.3 million who attended in summer of 2019. In Montgomery, Alabama, more than 12,000 of the community's 28,000 students enrolled before the June 1st deadline. Usually, about 2,500 go to summer school. The city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, had enrolled 14,700 by Friday and was expecting more to come. Last summer, just 9,300 students attended the offered online classes. It's an understatement to say the needs are greater this year, said Kalman Hedelman. He is an education policy expert in Maryland. Hedelman worries most about the reading skills of poorer, younger students. Many were having problems before schools closed. Now, after a year at home, they will have fallen even further behind. Hedelman said it's not realistic to think that summer school, no matter how good or intense, will close all the gaps. He wants to see required summer school as well as special classes during the next school year for many children in Baltimore, Maryland's largest city. It will help. It will at least give them a fighting chance, he said. Taylor Dennington is starting high school. She is a good student and never thought she would be in summer school. She and her many friends are pleased to be in school for the summer. This year was such an unmotivating school year, she said. Dennington is studying biology and math. I learn better in school than online. Being in a classroom where a teacher is present is so much better than waiting hours for an email back from your teacher, she told the Associated Press. Pernell Mitchell's children will have 5 or 6 weeks of full-time school. It will include sports and music. Some communities will also receive free transportation and meals. In North Carolina, more than 25% of school children are thought to be in danger of falling behind. The state recently passed a law giving those children priority for summer school. Some communities in other states are simply opening schools for all their students. I'm Susan Shand.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about James Buchanan, the 15th President of the United States. He was the third in a series of unsuccessful presidents. Millard Fillmore and Franklin Pierce had failed to resolve the country's increasing division over slavery. Democratic Party officials hoped Buchanan could do better. After all, he was a gifted lawyer and had been a member of the U.S. Congress, a Secretary of State, and a diplomat. But Buchanan was not so sure he could resolve the country's problems. He was right. He was the last president before the American Civil War. James Buchanan was born in the northern state of Pennsylvania. His father was a businessman, and his family was financially successful. Buchanan, the oldest son in a family with 11 children, received a good education. he attended Dickinson College in Pennsylvania and soon began working as a lawyer. His abilities earned him a good deal of money and a place in the state's legislature, but they were not able to win him a wife. As a young man, Buchanan fell in love with and proposed marriage to a young woman from a wealthy family. She accepted, but her father opposed the union. One day, his fiancée wrote Buchanan a letter saying she had reconsidered and decided not to marry him after all. 3 days later, she unexpectedly died. Buchanan was heartbroken. He promised never to marry anyone else, and he did not. To date, James Buchanan is the only U.S. president who never married. When he entered the White House, his niece served as his first lady. Even with problems in his personal life, Buchanan went on to have a strong career as a national politician. He hoped his party would nominate him as its candidate for president. But in the 1840s and early 1850s, the Democrats nominated other candidates. Finally, in 1856, the party chose Buchanan. But by then, he was no longer sure he wanted to be president. He believed the country would soon be at war. Violence had already broken out in the western territory of Kansas. White settlers there had clashed over whether Kansas would enter the Union as a slave or free state. In one dramatic event, an anti-slavery activist named John Brown had murdered several pro-slavery settlers. President Buchanan had clear ideas about slavery. He said in his inaugural speech that voters in the territories, a group made up of white men, should be able to decide the issue for themselves. In the same speech, Buchanan urged Americans to support an important Supreme Court ruling that became known as the Dred Scott decision. 2 days later, the court's justices announced the majority opinion in that case. The opinion said the federal government did not have the power to control slavery in the territories. In addition, the court declared that enslaved people were not U.S. citizens. They were property, it said. Enslaved people did not have any more rights than a horse or a chair. Buchanan hoped the decision would stop the country's debate over slavery. Instead, it made the debate even more intense. During his presidency, Buchanan took two other actions that increased tensions and damaged his public image. First, he tried to persuade Congress to accept a state constitution for Kansas. The Constitution permitted slavery, although a majority of Kansas voters had not agreed to it. The U.S. House of Representatives decided not to follow President Buchanan's wishes. They permitted Kansans to vote again on the Constitution. This time, Kansas voters rejected it. A majority agreed instead to seek admission into the Union as a free state. Buchanan's image also suffered because of an event known as the raid on Harper's Ferry. The raid was led by John Brown, the anti-slavery activist who had murdered pro-slavery settlers in Kansas. This time, Brown hoped to create an armed rebellion of anti-slavery activists and freed slaves. To get weapons, Brown and his men attacked a federal arsenal about 110 kilometers northwest of Washington, D.C. The armory was in the town of Harper's Ferry, in today's state of West Virginia. President Buchanan answered the raid by permitting federal troops to use force. The U.S. Marines surrounded Brown and his forces. They killed some and captured others, including Brown. A few weeks later, Brown was brought to trial, found guilty, and hanged. The event further divided Americans. Anti-slavery Northerners believed Brown was a hero. Pro-slavery Southerners believed he was a traitor. In general, Buchanan agreed with the Southerners. He said in a speech that Northerners should not tell Southerners what they could do in their states. But his words did not satisfy either side. For one thing, a main issue was whether slavery should be permitted in any new states. Buchanan did not comment on that point. At the end of his single term, Buchanan kept an earlier promise not to seek re-election. His party did not urge him to. Instead, Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats split. They nominated two different candidates. The Democrats' lack of unity provided an opening for a candidate from a new party. The Republican Party was comprised of Northerners who were against slavery. Their candidate was a lawyer without much experience in government. His name was Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln won the presidential election of 1860. In answer, the southern state of South Carolina withdrew from the Union. Buchanan, who was in the last weeks of his presidency, did not support the move. But he did not act to stop South Carolina either. He said the Constitution did not give him the power to force a state to stay in the Union. Following Buchanan's inaction, six other slaveholding southern states also seceded. Today, many historians agree James Buchanan was one of the worst American presidents. Buchanan had many good personal qualities, and he did not want to harm the country. Instead, a common belief is that he did not have the right skills to unite a divided nation. His behavior appeared to be guided by conflicting ideas. Buchanan said he opposed slavery and supported the Union, but he often took actions to protect slavery and help the South. Buchanan largely blamed anti-slavery activists and opposition politicians for the problems during his administration. But the public did not accept Buchanan's position. He was not respected after he left office, and he did not appear in public very often. Instead, the former president withdrew to his home in Pennsylvania until his death in 1868. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.